Okay. Yes.
I was also talking about double promotion. There used to be double promotion in my school.
Double promotion?
Yeah, so you could skip, like, you know, grades. Yeah. And I'm just comparing that to Gyan Yoga versus Bhakti Yoga. So Bhakti Yoga is double promotion.
Wow. Jump. I didn't see a lot of double promotion, but I did see people get held back. What happened to you? How come you're so much older than we are? Man, I got held back. That can happen. Okay, let's hear about promotion.
To promote is to raise to a more important or responsible job or rank, to advance as a student to the next higher grade, to contribute to the process of growth or further. It comes from Latin, promovere. Pro means forward, and movere means to move, so to move forward.
Promotion, to move forward. And read the translation, the meaning.
Again, the...
Definition.
To raise to a more important or responsible job or rank.
To move to a more important, responsible position?
To raise to a more important or responsible job or rank.
More responsible job or rank. Okay.
To advance.
To advance. Promotion. We want to be promoted. We're working for a promotion here. So you get promoted to the mode of goodness, and... from there, you can understand that the senses and the mind are only engaged in material activities due to being covered by perverted consciousness. That's quite an understanding, because actually you're not just engaging thinking you are the body, but there's a separation. Satvam tad brahma darshanam. You have a vision to see the difference between matter and spirit at that point. And in the Bhagavad Gita, there's descriptions of this. For instance, in the fifth chapter, Naiva kinchit karomi iti yukto manyeti tatvavit pashyan shrinvan sprasan jigran ashnan gachan svapanchvasan pralapan vishrinan grinnan unmishan nimishan api indriyan indriyarteshu vartanta iti dharayan. You know where the verse is? Fifth chapter? Is it in the shloka book? Probably not. So this verse says, naiva kinchit, that the person doesn't think, they're thinking, I don't do anything. Eva kinchit, nothing. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing anything. The senses, the mind, the body, they're all going on because of the control of the modes of material nature. They're moving. And this is a stage in self-realization of seeing oneself separate from the body. One can distinguish how the mind, the intelligence are working, and see that the body is only a machine, and that I'm separate from the machine. Have the separation. Otherwise, I'm working under the misconception that I'm the body. And what does Krishna say about that in the Bhagavad Gita? And where? Prakrite kriyamana ni gunai karmani sarvasha. Ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. It's a person who's vimudha. Vimudha means specifically, very certainly, foolish. This conception that I'm the body and that I'm the one that's acting. But the person who's self-realized has this conception that I'm separate from the body and the mind and the intelligence, and it's all going on because of the control of the modes of material nature, right? Yes.
Well, one might ask, you know, a Brahmin works in the mode of goodness. A Kshatriya, you know, works in the mode of passion. A Vaishya merchant may work mixed passion and ignorance. So if you have to come to the mode of goodness, does that mean you have to give up being a Kshatriya, give up being Vishishta had to become a Brahmin and get the Brahma Tejas? You know, does it mean you have to change your activities and your status in the system of Varnashram Dharma before you can understand Krishna?
Before you can understand Krishna?
In order to understand Krishna, you come up to the mode of goodness, right? You have to go to be in the mode of goodness.
You have to be promoted.
To be promoted to goodness. Do you have to be promoted from a merchant to a king to a priest or what?
Well, Krishna answers that question himself in the 18th chapter, doesn't he? Right?
That by worship of the Lord...
According to your own nature.
Doing your own work, one can attain perfection doing one's own work. and that one shouldn't do another's work.
And also, we've understood in the Bhagavad Gita that you can't, your swabhav, that's something that you're not easily going to change, and therefore you shouldn't try to do another's work and change from one situation to another capriciously.
But he also says that if you engage in pure devotional service without deviation, then you immediately transcend the modes of nature.
So for that, we have this Daivya Varnashram, where we actually we situate ourselves in a mode of work and life that is gives us protection, and so that we can have a balance in our life and at the same time go on doing our devotional service. Because if the mind and senses are too turbulent, for instance, if someone, for instance, is in the brahmachari ashram, but they're not suited for that ashram, and we've seen it before, then they won't be able to concentrate. And if they move into another ashram, like the grihastha ashram, I don't know what other ashram they're going to move into, then their senses can feel satisfied. Prabhupada says that sense gratification is like salt. You don't want too much and too little, or too little. There has to be a balance. So on one side of our life, we have to have some balance so that we can fight with Maya, Prabhupada says. He mentions this in the story of Gajendra. And Gajendra was fighting with a crocodile. Gajendra is much more powerful than a crocodile. But when he was pulled into the water, he became weak because he's not a water animal, typically. And the crocodile is. So Prabhupada says there that you have to find the place from the material perspective where you feel strong to fight with Maya. And if you find that, then you fight with Maya. Then you have 2 feet on the ground. If you're going to jump up high, you got to have 2 feet on the ground so you can jump up. So from that position, then you can perform your devotional service and with real gusto from whatever position you're in and come to the transcendental platform. Mam cha yo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samakitaitan brahma puya yakalpate.
In that section also with Gajendra, Srila Prabhupada really mentions how becoming a devotee is like declaring war against the material energy. It's one of my favorite purports where we have to be aware, what have we done, you know, what decision have you made to become a devotee? It's not something small. But then from a playful point of view, that Smiram Bhangi Treya Parichitam verse really states the same thing. That if you're all still interested in your society, friendship and love and all of this, then don't go to Govinda because he takes your mind that way. So.
Nice points. So we learned about narration. That was a revelation today, wasn't it? Comes from the word gnare from Latin, which means to know. That's something. Is that in contention for the 3 drops of nectar that we take out of the class? Is there another contender? Krishna is attracted only through bhakti as a contender. The first line that I read about the intelligence.
The living entity has intelligence.
The living force has intelligence. Gunarnavarnane.
Hare Krishna.
Go ahead. Yes?
Hare Krishna. This is Sri Babu Prabhuji. I'm Sri Babu Prabhu.
Sri Babu. Haribo. He's checking in from Seattle. Yes, go ahead.
Haribo Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
So this conversation brings me one verse from Bhagavad Gita, Prabhu.
Go ahead.
Tesham satata yuktanam bhajitam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam. So to fight with Maya, it looks like we have to be always engaged in devotional service, and Krishna will also give intelligence to come to him.
Bravo. That was a very good contribution. Good. It's right to the point of this chapter. It's that Krishna is there within the heart, and he's supplying the intelligence. He gives the spiritual intelligence. And what is the qualification? One who is sincere. Desham satata yuktanam, we're trying. Bhajatam priti purvakam, then worshiping with love. Then Krishna gives the intelligence how to come to him. So if we sincerely try and pray.
Ananyas chintayantamam yena yejana parupashate. Those people who are no other, your chinta is nowhere else. Then I carry what you lack and I preserve what you have.
And ananya cheta satatam yomam smarati nityasaha tasya ham sulabha parta nitya yuktyasya yoginaha. Ananya. Ananya chinta. How is everybody? Ananya. Good. Okay, good. Promoted. We're by this process, we get promoted. It's uncanny, actually. I've had this experience at Govardhan. We stay in a room for 30 days. Basically, we stay in a room for 30 days, and we hear and chant. Huh? 4 hours. 4 hours, strictly 4 hours. There's a... Of course, the rest of the day is all hearing and chanting, too, in various ways, but there's 4 hours of intensive hearing and chanting in the room with the likes of Jai Keshava and Giri Govardhan and other participants. And so, but we've all noticed it, that after, you know, day after day after day, it's one thing once a week or whatever, but 4 hours a day, and then after 30 days, when you walk away, you feel promoted. There's a promotion by spiritual sound because you're actually associating with devotees and Krishna, and he manifests in that situation. It just moves us forward. Jai Keshava and Gandharvika.
One thing that still sticks in my mind 2 years later is that word Atita Vancha. I wrote that down.
It's actually Vancha Tita.
Vancha Tita.
I probably gave it to you backwards.
Ah, Vancha.
And now there's a devotee in Japan named Vancha Tita.
It really, yeah, I remember writing that down on the yellow piece of paper, but it has really stayed in my, that how Krishna, it doesn't require anything from you. He just...
Vancha atita means that Krishna fulfills your desire beyond what you could ever imagine or expect. That name of Krishna is given in the Krishna Lila Stava. Yes.
I was just, maybe I should tell this in Dad, but this thought came to my mind. Like, just like a living example, like Malini didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness before getting married. But with the association, that always gives me inspiration, like with Srivas Prabhu's association, how she has made so much tremendous progress and her faith is very strong than most people who have come through various other processes. Like, everybody gets it, but that example gives me, like, how one gets promoted in the association of devotees.
Yeah, that is a pronounced example, and Srivas is going to comment on it.
Well, she has had a very, very strong faith in spite of me, so that is...
nice. The other day when we were in Laguna Beach, Tukaram Prabhu, who's the temple president there, in front of about 500 devotees, gave a long talk. Well, not a long talk, but it was an inspired talk, and it was glorifying the devotees who had helped put the festival together. It was kind of a mini devotee appreciation day, but he was going around and just mentioning, and he had it all on the tip of his mind, and he was mentioning them. And Savas happened to be there, the temple president from Los Angeles, and so Tukaram was appreciating that Savas had driven up for the festival, and he was saying how Savas is one of his heroes, and he's been the temple president there for 25 years, and that he was going on, and then Savas interrupted him. He said, actually, my wife and I were just driving up here, and we were thinking, what a great job you're doing here at the temple, and we were glorifying you so much that we missed our exit. So this kind of exchange was going on several other devotees, you know, after he glorified them, they glorify him back. And when, later on, when we were talking together about aspects of the festival that were highlights, we were at somebody's house, and Madhukari was there. And when it came his turn to talk about one of the highlights, he said that he really appreciated Savas's counter glorification, if you want to put it that way, to what Tukaram said. And he was just saying, there's a rasa in that. You know, the devotees are glorifying each other, and this is a kind of a rasa that goes on. And there's an art to that also, about, you know, someone says something and then you counter. So Srivas is very expert at that art. And he takes after his Guru Maharaj in that way, because with Radhanath Swami, no matter what you say to glorify, he'll always come back with something. And I told him once, I said, you should write a book of comebacks. Because they're so unique. I remember one time he was at my house and I was just setting up my puja, and he was sitting chanting japa. And so I said, Maharaj, I hope my puja doesn't interrupt your japa. If your puja interrupted my japa, I would be a descendant of Ravana. He just said it so dramatically like that, that I thought, okay, no matter what I say, he always has something to come back with in that way. So we have some nominees, and we also have a little more time, so we're going to make progress. And this is an unlimited topic in this Prayers Personified Vedas, and we should form a seminar just around that to talk more about that. We'll go more into this, but we did touch on it. Kurunath Prabhu.
It's kind of interesting that the question is, you know, how can the Vedas, which deal mostly with the three modes of material nature, and how can our own words, which are made of matter and vibrations, how can they help us approach or understand or express that which is transcendental to the three modes of nature? And then it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada immediately says, this indicates that he's asking about whether the absolute truth is ultimately personal or impersonal.
I always found that interesting too. I remember the first time I read that, I thought, it does? He cuts in so fast, and that's Prabhupada's technique. The Bhagavad Gita as it is a similar thing. It's just like when you're in a parking lot and there's an open space, somebody cuts in. It's like he's cutting in on all the impersonal possibilities. You know, it's like, you know, somebody's like, no, bhakti, you know, like bhakti. So every word for word translation, people look at, that's not what it says. It says yogi, not a bhakta. You know, like when I was reading bhakti, because that's the conclusion. You know, he's bringing us to that. And so he's being very sure that, bringing us to the mind doesn't wander off of the path, because that's the tendency in the material world. Icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena. We have this tendency for this illusion that I want to, I involve myself in the duality of the material world and I forget God out of some kind of hatred, separation through envy. Yeah, very interesting. And it solves the whole problem. It sets the stage for everything else, which is Krishna's there. He's doing it.
I was listening to a Bhagavatam class from Srila Prabhupada. I was driving up here. It's from the teachings of Queen Kunti. And Srila Prabhupada was very much adamant about the reason why we fight the rascal scientists is because they're misleading people. And we really have to. So what you just said about cutting in and really establish that point, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is an absolute person. And he made it so strong, it was almost like this is the purpose of ISKCON. That's what I got in the class, was we have to really fight against this impersonal mentality, especially with the scientists, you know, taking over. Therefore, I call them rascal scientists, he was saying. It was really far out, just the strength when Prabhupada got to that particular point of the class. And he just really, his voice got much stronger. You know, this is
yeah, purpose. Rascal scientist. I heard a part of an interview. I'd like to go look up the whole thing, but I think his name was Searle from UC Berkeley. Sound familiar?
Yeah, John Searle.
Anyway, he was talking about how you know, we don't need religion or theology to understand consciousness, that through science we'll explain it. And we'll be able to do that in about 1,000 years. We'll have it all wrapped up. And then it's like, if you consider like science over the last, you know, when has really science has emerged? Exponentially, the increases that we've made, the gaps that have been closed in progression that we've made in technology through science and science itself, 1,000 years is really, really a long time. You know, the advances we're making now in 5 years represent, you know, what we used to make in 100 years or whatever, you know. And so to make, this is an audacious, outlandish statement that in 1,000 years we'll explain it. For now, you kids, you know, don't worry about this religion stuff, even though it's prevalent in everyone's culture everywhere. And it's just an aberration, even though it is everywhere. And it occurs to everyone all at the same time. But don't bother with that. We'll figure it out for you in about 1,000 years. and so this is the kind of thing that Prabhupada would react to. That this is, they're cheating you. This is nonsense. Pardon? A post-dated check. You're being shaken down. They're shaking you down. So don't go for it. And we should feel some twinge of chivalrous anger, you know, to counteract that.
And Srila Prabhupada was really saying,
Mike,
as you said that also, he was saying how Swarup Damodar Prabhu at the time had challenged the scientists about the, you know, can you create matter, can you create life, etc. And the scientist says, I do not know. And Prabhupada, you call yourself a teacher, but you're in the I do not know category, therefore you're a cheater. And it was really, really far out, just how strong Prabhupada was, that if you are a teacher, you should know. Because people come to you for answers, you should give answers. You cannot be an I do not know teacher. Yeah. So that, therefore that is cheating.
Yeah. Doctor?
Yeah, you know, this point that is made to dismiss scientists, that they are, in fact, predicting and saying things, and that that has no validity or is false. Actually, the point needs to be looked at in a proper perspective. When somebody makes a statement that we will know in 1,000 years, what he is talking about is, by the current methods of science that I use, they will know. Now, you can say the current methods of science are impersonal. So there is some truth to that, that if one is very haughty to say, look, we have the methodology and it's just a matter of getting to it in time, you can surely rebut that, because you say your methodology is impersonal, the methods of science that you're using are based mostly on material elements and evidence in the cosmic manifestation, and you are trying to explain the transcendental. How can you? Okay, that argument can be made. It can be made by the people from the transcendental side. But that is not to take away the fact that there is validity in explaining even transcendental phenomena by the scientific method. So we cannot say that science is bad or scientists are bad. What the challenge is for science to be able to explain scientifically transcendental phenomena. Prabhupada also has pointed out that the purpose of scientists, in many ways, they would be advanced if they are able to explain God. And to their own profession, by articulating in the language of that profession. So you see, don't try to throw away the baby with the bathwater. The thing is simple, that the current methods of science, which are based on materialistic phenomena, may not be able to explain it, but science in itself per se is a good mode or a means to be able to explain transcendental phenomena, because many people will come into Krishna consciousness if they are convinced or have an understanding from a scientific platform rather than through blind faith. Yeah, so this is one of the things.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I think that was Srila Prabhupada's point, was science isn't bad. I actually had a conversation with a scientist about this, that science isn't bad. It's just when people try to dismiss Krishna out of the picture, that's why he calls them rascal scientists. It's not because the science is bad. It's the method, the methodology is how you're dismissing the real scientist himself. You're putting Krishna out of the picture and trying to establish yourself as Krishna, that I know what's going on. But they don't. So I think if they do add Krishna, because science and Krishna are synonymous, practically speaking. They're not separable. And this is what we have done, especially in the Western world. Separation of church and state, separation of, you know. So we have separated things so much that that core person is missing. And I think that was Srila Prabhupada's Nivrisesha Shunyavaripa, kick that out and establish Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. But scientifically, definitely scientifically. Yeah.
I also had another question about an earlier discussion, that we often quote this verse and make the point that the spirit soul is not the doer. This was the Prakrite Kriya Manani verse, which is saying the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Now, when people are often told this, they are confused. They say, are the modes only acting? The soul doesn't have a role in anything? Is the soul just like a witness who is separated, and the modes are acting? This often comes up as a kind of a confusion. And then we also see in the Bhagavad Gita, in other parts of the Bhagavad Gita, such as in the 18th chapter, where the factors of action are actually identified, and this would be in the verse 18:14. This is the adhisthanam tathakarta karanam cha prithagvidam vividascha prithakchesta daivam chaivatra panchamam. The place of action, the body, the performer, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the super soul. These are the five factors of action. And if one really reads the purport carefully, in the purport, for instance, it says that the word avisthanam refers to the body. The soul within the body is acting to bring about the results of activity and is therefore known as karta, the doer. That the soul is the knower and the doer is stated in the Shruti, and it cites other passages there. So it would seem that we have somewhat of a contradiction between the Prakrite Kriyaman Manani verse and this one talking about the five factors of action, in which it is saying that the soul is playing some role, that actually the senses are merely the instruments of action, but there is a role for the soul in that it is directing the body, or as such is the purveyor of the action that is going on. So it has some activity associated with it. And I often, when I look at these two verses, the question that comes up is, how does one reconcile the interpretation of what is being said?
Well, kind of the way you've just done, to understand that the the separation between the soul and the body is, there is some connection through our identification with the body. And that connection is called illusion when we identify that we're the doer. But when someone becomes enlightened and they have actual knowledge, they see the difference between the soul and the body. And the soul animates the body. And also, in the verse that you mentioned from the 18th chapter of the Gita, he has some connection because of his desire, although he may be in a sleeping state, and therefore his desire is kind of a, it's like a dreamlike state. But nonetheless, because of his desires, there are reactions, and he has some connection with the body. I mean, when you drive a car, I mean, how much do you really think about how the fuel injector is working? Do you think about that? When you're driving, you don't. And, you know, how the drivetrain is going and all those kinds of things. But you can't step on the gas. And if you get angry all of a sudden, you might, like, step on it really hard or something like that and cut in front of somebody. But you're not doing much. You're really just kind of, you know, behind the wheel, and you initiate, and then everything else goes forward. So, you know, there are different explanations are the kind of body that we have and the kind of nature we have. For instance, if I become a dog, then I'm going to bark, and I'm not going to quote Shakespeare. I'm locked in. That's my, you know, the modes of material nature are set. I've bought a ticket, and I'm on that, you know, I have that seat. And even the human form of life, you know, moving from one situation to another is very difficult. There's so much that's set already by the modes of material nature, including, you know, if your arm becomes paralyzed or something, you don't have much to do with correcting that. You can try the best you can, but we really don't have ultimate control over the functions of the body. As we know, there are involuntary functions going on all the time. My heart is beating right now. I have no real control over it. So it's very minimal, you know, what kind of influence we actually have. And in the verse from the third chapter, sort of a counterpart of the verse that we quoted earlier, Prakriti Kriyamanani, Krishna says, Tattvavittu Mahabaho Guna Karma Vibhagayo Guna Guneshu Vartanta Iti Matva Nasajjate. One who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, O Madhyarm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruit of results. So an enlightened person becomes aware that he's in that situation and that the body's going on, and therefore he makes that distinction between the two. Yes.
Something just really popped out in my head from when we read the Brahma Sangita earlier, and you see the state of how Mahavishnu and how Shambhu is created, etc., etc. And also it is said that Vishnu is in the dreaming state in this material realm, and so are we. I'm still trying to really grasp what I just stumbled upon in my own head. But if we really minutize that whole Mahavishnu state, we're going through the same thing. And so then Pakrite Kriyamanani, that person who thinks, oh, I am the doer, we also see here Vishnu, although it's emanating from him, it's his desire, this material realm, he's aloof from it, he's separate from it. So because we think we are, you know, we're the one moving everything, is mind, divine energy, quote unquote, then Krishna kind of, you know, vimuda. You aren't in knowledge as you just read. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Srivasan, and over.
Actually, these verses complement each other because 18th chapter is a summary of the entire Gita, and in that context, Krishna brings up this verse. In the third chapter, he says that if you think you are just doing the activities on your own, you're wrong. And in the 18th chapter, he elaborates that there are more what motivates a man or a soul to perform activities is not just the soul or the soul's desire himself, but there are other factors which are involved in that. And complementary to that is that in the Bhagavatam we read, when Maharaj Parikshit was asking, why are you suffering? You see that the karma or the chain of karmic reactions are so profound and so deep that you can't single out a particular cause for one's reactions. And the bull says that, you know, I don't know who's caused me this problem. So this whole thing is like a complementary thing, that the soul is trapped in between, but the soul who thinks just I, this is me alone, that initiates, that performs the activities, then you are not in the complete knowledge.
Correct. I just was trying to point out that it is not that the soul is not playing a role. It is playing some role. It is a distinction between whether it's playing exclusively a role that some people may think, in which case it's wrong, that the Prakriti Kriyamani verse advises you that you are wrong if you think you exclusively are playing a role. But the other side of the coin is that the soul is still playing some role in the activities and the affairs, welfare of a person, and that it should not be construed that it is inactive and only the modes are acting and it's not playing a role. There is some role. In fact, in the development of consciousness, there is the premise that the soul will have some input, because when we get to a transcendental position, we are getting to a position of superior intelligence, from where the Bhagavad Gita says the superior intelligence is going to be acting. Where is that coming from? It's coming from the soul. So we would have to say that the soul has some role in activity, not exclusively acting.
Last point, if I may.
Yeah.
Well, if the soul, as Vaisheshika Prabhu said, is completely under the mode of material nature, then the soul is driven just exclusively in the matter. There is no spiritual interaction of the soul, because the soul is deluded by matter. In that state, it is that the activities of the soul are completely directed by the modes of material nature.
Well, I would have to say that the modes of nature are actually the instruments that are carrying out the activity, but the soul is playing some role in directing them. It is not totally inactive. And it is not that it's aloof. It is giving some intelligence to the modes, and the modes are carrying on the function. Like the example is well taken about the fuel system or the injection system, that the transmission, it's being run by it, but there is also the driver in the car who is overall directing the car.
I just observed some kind of a correlation. In chapter 13, Krishna says, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhik sarva kshetresu bharata kshetra kshetrajnayor jnanam yattach jnanam matam mama. O Sayon of Bharata, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies, and to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. The connection I see is that as individual souls we have willpower, and the willpower is the reason we have chosen to be here. So it is the same willpower which we are using to make all the decisions. But because Krishna is the knower of all bodies, his will is much more supreme. And he is enacting all our desires through his abilities. He says he is the ability in man. So I think that's how we can connect these both verses. What do you think, Prabhu?
Yeah, there's more in the 13th chapter, in the 30th verse. One who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature, and sees that the self does nothing, actually sees. Purport, this body is made of material nature under the direction of the supersoul, and whatever activities are going on in respect to one's body are not his doing. Whatever one is supposed to do, either for happiness or distress, one is forced to do because of the bodily constitution. The self, however, is outside all these bodily activities. This body is given according to one's past desires. To fulfill desires, one is given the body with which he acts accordingly. Practically speaking, the body is a machine designed by the Supreme Lord to fulfill desires. Because of desires, one is put into difficult circumstances to suffer or to enjoy. This transcendental vision of the living entity, when developed, makes one separate from bodily activities. One who has such vision is an actual seer. And back to the fifth chapter also, some important statements that Krishna makes about how we are, excuse me, I'm looking at the fourth chapter. Is everyone still okay? Okay. Look at, well, there's Naiva Kinchit Kuromiti, and what I want to look at is number 14, 514. The kartritvam na karmani lokasya srijati prabhu na karma pala samyogam subhavas tu pravartate. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. 15. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. There's a the role that the soul plays is that there's some desire. And in the material conception of life, the soul is covered over because of his association with the modes of material nature. And because of that, he's acquired various modes which cover him in different ways and pervert his desires. And he becomes helpless and is going on from one situation to the next without consciousness of how that's happening and how he's moving from one place to the next. And therefore, he identifies with the body and the circumstances. This was described by Maitreya to Vidura when he said that in a dream, one might see that one's head is being cut off and therefore lament. And the emotion is coming that I'm crying, my head's being cut off, but your head can't be cut off and you see it at the same time. And that's a kind of, it's a dreamlike state. So in the conditioned state, when I'm covered over by the three modes of material nature, it's practically meaningless what I'm going through because it's illusory, it's dreamlike. And although the suffering is real, and when one comes to an awakened state, he realizes his actual relationship, that he's a helpless swimmer in the ocean. And really that he's, you know, in the sense of the Prakriti Kriyamanayani verse, it's this kind of false ego that I'm really doing all this. I'm directing my destiny and so on and so forth. But it's not true. He's actually a lot more helpless than he thinks. And when he comes to this knowledge, tattva vittu mahabaho guna karma vibhaga, he gets a perspective of how big this ocean is and how helpless I actually am as a swimmer. And yes, of course, our volition and is being created by our desire. You know, we're a living entity with desire. But in the enlightened state, he's actually seeing that I've been in a helpless state. I've really been thrown from one place to the next and now I need transcendent help to come out of this situation. And and that's good news also, because as Krishna says here, that he doesn't assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. It means that once we're awakened, once by the association of devotees and Agyata Sukriti, and then coming to the process of how to get knowledge, we can actually do something about it. And then it becomes our responsibility to get a promotion out of that situation and to a higher level.
So would we say then, in the awakened state especially, the soul now is very aware.
That's not on.
And also,
I just don't want to deprive any of us.
Would we say then that in the awakened state especially, the soul is now very aware, being awakened, and may participate or play a role in directing the actions of an individual. Why am I taken to devotional service? It is because I'm awakened and my soul is taking me there. Not that my modes of material nature are taking me there.
Yeah, we can take help.
Although we can also claim that having come into the mode of goodness now, I'm very close to the transcendental platform. We have discussed that in several verses over the last few days. That may happen spontaneously. One may transit, if you will, to devotional service because he or she now come into that mode of goodness. But the thing is, being there in that awakened state, it would seem that quite a bit of intelligence to do the activities of that individual now may come from the soul, the awakening of the soul. We would think.
Go ahead.
I was just thinking of this, the one that I heard in the lecture that Burijan Prabhu was saying, that ahankar is the root cause in it. Apparently, we feel that the soul is acting. And he was saying that ahankar means you think I am my car. So that example that came to my mind was like, suppose you drive and then there is something that's going to hit the top of the roof or something. You are inside the car and only your this one will be affected, but still you do like this, right? But apparently it feels because of your misidentification. You don't need to do that. But apparently because you're so much ingrained, automatically you do that. So because whatever though it seems like the soul is acting, but actually it is not, because it's wrongly identifying itself, but it appears that the soul is doing like this and doing like that in the material consciousness. But it's all because of that misidentification that it's body. And whatever it does, it's just at the body level, but it's perceived in a wrong way that it appears that the soul is acting.
So the reason I brought nomination for that verse you read in the purse of the personified Venus, as far as the living force is extremely intelligent, goes back to what Prabhuji has just said, that why you also read that why is the living entity intelligent? And Srila Prabhupada says that we're here for two reasons. The material body is created for two reasons, either for sense gratification or for liberation, how you use your intelligence. So when you use your intelligence for liberation, then it's more than the mode of goodness. That whole bhakti process then develops because you have decided to put your intelligence that way. And if you put your intelligence towards sense gratification, so it's again, it depends on you. Where are you going to put your intelligence?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I have a question actually in this. Because we have been practicing for some few years and we have the shastras. It is like we are at least theoretically understanding it. But like when we go out and talk to some people who are new, maybe going through the physical problems, some mental problems, identifying the body and maybe having some disease, identify the body. So first message that we want to communicate to them is that you are not the body, you are not the mind, so don't identify too much with it. And you are transcendental and everything. But that message is very difficult to get across in such situations where it's most needed also. So can you please suggest some
ways? That's why Dhamma Arvansidhari Prabhu found an event at Apple the other day. It was a beer bash. You know what a beer bash is? It's a place where everyone goes and drinks beer. It's a company event, and people go there and they sample all different kinds of beer, apparently. I don't know, I'm just guessing. And there's food and music and beer, alcohol, and there's and these kinds of things going on. So because he's always looking for an angle, a place to get in to preach Krishna consciousness, he called me and said, how about if we could set up a yoga booth there? And I said, nah, I don't think so. Because I've been to these kinds of things before. We've done there are these German festivals, I forget what they're called. Oktoberfest and such like that we've had. And about 5 minutes into it, it starts going like this down. People's recognition and the ability to actually appreciate anything transcendental is diminished by the mode of ignorance, which is accelerated by the consumption of alcohol. People just become stupid. And so this is kind of you know, an indication, you know, when people, when a spark falls on a bog, then it doesn't ignite. But when it comes into a dry grass, then it can ignite quicker. So there has to be a program to help elevate people, you know, who are in lower modes of material nature, to a position where they can understand anything, philosophy. So Lord Chaitanya's system is very practical because even people who are intoxicated, they can chant and dance and have an experiential... That's not on.
Except they are kind of in sati mode in some ways, at least like when they are going through some miseries, then they become philosophical to some extent. So they can understand these kind of things. But sometimes like our way if we are communicating to them, is there any some ways we can like communicate this message? Or we should just give prasadam and say Hare Krishna and I'm praying for you.
It's an individual process. It's not stereotyped. And it's a heart-to-heart connection when you meet people. You coming back? That's good news. Please come back soon. I mean, you're coming back today, like. Okay. Chai Keshava Prabhu is leaving. Hare Bhav! Thanks for coming. It's practical because... it's individual, I should say. We should take care with each individual kind of person and not make it a stereotype. If we're talking to people and concerned about their particular individual situation when we're dealing with them, this is the best way to preach. I see on book distribution all the time that, you know, you have to, when you're meeting one person after another, you have to really feel where they're coming from. And not prejudge them, because people are very perceptive and they can understand when you're condescending, when you're arrogant. If you're humble and you try to actually help them, and you don't assume that they're ignorant, better to assume and systematically cultivate that they're a soul and that they're very exalted. And if you think of them like that when you talk to them, then Krishna gives intelligence how to get through to them, and you never know which way it's going to come from. I saw Keshav Bharati Maharaj was preaching to a very intelligent professor whose children thought that she was crazy for going to associating with the devotees. And then the kids one time had to come pick her up from a program. It was a cooking class. And they were very much against Krishna consciousness, but they had to go in and get their mother. So when they walked in, they met some of the devotee women who were cooking, and from a completely non-philosophical standpoint, they struck up a conversation, and they just felt a warmth that came from them. It was the environment. It was seeing them in there working, and just the way they glowed, and they walked away feeling different about Krishna consciousness. And then one thing led to another. So it's not what we know. It's not what you know. It's who you are. And... So there's something that emanates from people who actually have something. There's an intangible point. If someone's controlling their senses and they're actually sincere and they're practicing, even behind closed doors at all times, they emanate a certain kind of a power, a determination, and people pick up on that. It's an intangible. You know, I see all the time people who are not acquainted with Krishna consciousness so much, but they'll meet a particular devotee and they go, I just like him, you know. I like that guy. So what do you say? I'm not really sure, but you know, I want to be there next time. Can I be there next time? Isn't it? When you see a powerful devotee, people just want to be there. They sense something. So it's not necessarily a formula, although it is important to have formulas and templates to adjust to help certain kinds of people, but it's really about who we are that's important, you know. Hare Krishna. Yes.
So, Prabhuji, what would be the... I always think that it's only through bhakti that you will realize that you are the soul and not the body. Because I try to think every Thursday before I go to my acupuncturist that I'm the soul and I'm not the body. Mm-hmm. Because she gives me 5 inches needles and they hurt. But... you know, the moment the needle goes, it's like, oh no, it hurts so bad. So what exactly does one do?
That's the same question that Devahuti asked Kapiladev. She said, I know all the self-realization things and I'm not my body and I've heard it all the time, but it really seems like I am my body. I mean, she said that the mind and the intelligence and the body and the soul, they're all so mixed together, it really does seem like we're the body. It's so hard to separate the two. So what should I do? She was putting that question before her son, who is the Supreme Personality of God, and he said that you must hear intensely over a long period of time when the elements and that this example of a coconut, you know, as it dries out, it separates inside and then you see, oh, it's different. So similarly, as we go through the process, especially of hearing that we heard today, was the narration is important, then we'll have that realization. We should also be introspective.
Also, when we use the term awakened soul, what does that mean as compared to a sleeping soul?
It means that, like, as I mentioned in the verse before, labdha buddhi, one gains one's intelligence and sees a new prospect in life. Like it's spoken about when one, there's descriptions of diksha. Diksha means divyam jnanam. You're fully receptive to transcendental knowledge, and you see a new light of opportunity in life. This, when we see people come to Krishna consciousness and they read a book for the first time or something, and they realize that I'm not part of this world, actually. I'm something else. I'm not going to die. And I have there's a much bigger picture than I ever thought. This is a symptom of awakened intelligence, that someone realizes that I'm Brahman. I'm part of that big thing, you know, and it's an exciting kind of awakening. There's an unlimited possibility. Some have said that Om really means yes, that everything's possible. That I've come to the human form of life, and now everything's possible. You can get whatever you want. What we've been searching for by going to the moon and going to the bottom of the ocean and looking everywhere, everyone wants, you know, the whole thing. But when you get awakened intelligence through the association of devotees and scripture, you think that actually now I see it's all possible. So it's that the ultimate possibility thinking, you know, is that awakening of intelligence that everything's possible. All right? You had a final comment?
Just wanted to add that the same thing in Bhagavatam, Maharaj Raghugana also says the same thing. You know, you said that, you know, I'm not the body, but you know, when I take heavy loads, my body is feeling the weight. Just to compliment what you're saying.
And what did his guru tell him?
He said that when you are in state of spiritual realization, you'll identify that it's not your body, and then you don't feel it. The body is just an external factor. To that effect. I don't remember 100% there, each and every verse.
So can we have our 3 points? Let's just nail them down really quick. 1 point is about, what do we have?
I have one has to utilize the intelligence over mind and senses. That was one.
Okay.
There's narration. Then Krishna is attracted to the devotees. Living force has intelligence, and we had Desam Satata Yuktanam, and then the Ananyas Chintanyantomam, that verse also. Then we had promoted Vanchatita.
All right, just the first four things you said, but skip the third and use the fourth. And can you make those the 3 points?
Okay, so utilize the intelligence.
One, two, and four.
Two and four. Narration and living force as intelligence.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Prema Nande Haribol.